Presidential elections typically draw a significant number of voters to the polls, and this year, a coalition of Alaska organizations is working to increase that number even more, especially in underserved communities. What does it take to boost voter turnout across the state, especially in communities where people aren't as likely to vote? What barriers are standing in the way? And what issues do Alaska voters care about? We'll discuss voter engagement today on Talk of Alaska. Good morning. It's Talk of Alaska. I'm Wesley Early in for Lori Townsend. And you may have heard, but there's a presidential election happening in just 3 weeks. And Alaskans are set to elect the state's lone member of Congress as well. As campaigns work to drum up support for their candidates, the efforts fall moot if voters aren't actually getting to the polls in the first place. Today, I'm joined by several guests working to get out the Alaska vote. First is Emily Leek-Mitchy. She's the director of the Alaska Voter Hub. Welcome.
Thank you, Wesley. I'm grateful to be here today.
Yeah, and next we've got Michelle Spark. Michelle is the Director of Strategic Initiatives for Get Out the Native Vote. Welcome.
Good morning, Chamai.
And finally, we've got Celeste Hodge-Groudon, who is the President and CEO of the Alaska Black Caucus, joining us. Celeste, thanks for being here.
Absolutely. Glad to be here.
And before we get into the discussion, we also have our own voter outreach project we've been working on at Alaska Public Media. It is called The View From Here. You can view all of that at alaskapublic.org/theviewfromhere. So, Emily, I wanted to start with you. Can you talk broadly about the Alaska Voter Hub? And I understand it's a fairly new organization.
Yeah, I think it's important to recognize that this organization has been around to some extent and in many forms for much longer than I've been the director in 2022. So the Voter Hub started as a kind of naturally, where the nonprofit community was doing voter outreach, this nonpartisan voter outreach, and core nonprofit leaders like the Alaska Center, Planned Parenthood Advocacy Alliance, and the Alaska Community Action on Toxics, among others, were reaching voters, knocking on doors, making phone calls, and found that they were doing some duplicative work. So they started coordinating naturally. And that was maximizing efforts and increasing their efficiency. So it's important to give credit where credit is due. This has been in existence longer than I've been here. And I think it's also important to note that this method of engagement, engaging nonprofit organizations to do this nonpartisan voter outreach, is a method that's effective, and it's done in 30-some other states across the nation to effectively increase voter turnout, especially among women, youth voters, and voters of color. So that's our goal as a coalition. We want to reach women and youth and voters of color and really empower voters who historically have been left out of the voting process and who continue to face barriers when it comes to accessing the polls.
Yeah, and we've got representatives from two of those groups. Get Out the Native Vote is one of the groups you work with. The Alaska Black Caucus is another. Can you talk about some of the other groups that are with the Alaska Voter Hub?
Certainly, yeah. Some of our newer members are the Pacific Community of Alaska. Civic engagement is one of their pillars. Oops, sorry. And then, as I mentioned, you know, Planned Parenthood Advocacy Alliance, the Alaska Center Education Fund, Alaska Community Action on Toxics. These are steering committee members. And like I said, we're all coordinating that voter outreach to ensure that all youth and women and voters of color are reached with that comprehensive voting education, and that community members are reached by a trusted leader in their community.
Yeah, and I'm curious, Michelle, you know, with Get Out the Native Vote, can you talk about that organization broadly? And can you talk also about how voter outreach in rural communities works a little different than maybe on the road system?
A lot different. World's different. It's miles and weather and all kinds of factors that affect it. Get Out the Native Vote has been around since 1999, and it has been a labor of love and civic duty among different personalities and Native leadership that have kind of carried the torch every election season to amplify the fact that an election was coming. And it started developing more into an organization in the 2000s, and then in 2020, the Cook Inlet Tribal Council assumed the responsibilities from the ANCSA Regional Association, and we turned into a 501c3. They wrote a five-year plan. We're in our fourth year of the five-year plan, and I'm the first director under this new iteration. So, you know, they've given me a lot of leverage with my political background and experiences to foresee how this organization shapes out. And having the voter hub and allies and, you know, the cooperation of Native corporations and nonprofits has been, you know, transformative. And it's been really, really exciting to see our growth and becoming what we are today, which is, you know, a trusted source, and that our reach is long and far and very dedicated, so that we can remove the barriers, the systemic barriers that thwart our ability to even have a polling station set up, have election workers, and have it closed out in time, because 13 villages voted in 2022 in the midterms and the special election, but they didn't have their full votes counted in the end. So, and then we were talking earlier about how we had a 16% voter rejection rate in our first all-by-mail ballot experience. And to think that we could move to absentee ballots as a new system to save the state money is really terrifying for us, because, you know, with all the postal service vacancies in our villages, which are in the 70, you know, numbering over 70 communities, that affects almost over 14,000 voters. And we're in a state of voter apathy that, you know, we've seen it plummet like 50 points since 1982. So we're here to say this is achievable. We can get back to our 82 numbers, where we had a 66% turnout among the Native community.
Wow. And, you know, one of the things I'm really interested in is, as you run into these problems, sort of finding creative solutions. You know, Celeste, I'm really interested in the ways that the Alaska Black Caucus partners with local businesses and organizations, even churches sometimes. Can you talk about how you facilitate those partnerships in the first place?
Well, recognizing that, you know, many people died for the right to vote, especially people that look like me. And so it's important that we connect with our community to make sure that individuals get to the polls and vote, or whether it's voting early or actually at the ballot box, dropping off their ballots at the drop boxes. But it's really essential. And we understand that for our community, you know, to really connect, we need to involve more activities. And so one of the things, I'm just thinking of a recent activity that we held, was the Get Out the Vote Gospel Fest. And we had it at the church. And so, you know, a lot of individuals attend church within our communities. And so it was well attended. And in between all of the beautiful music, all of the singers, I mean, the soulful sounds of music, we had infomercials. And the infomercials actually shared information about the importance of voting. We took individuals through the history of voting and then the importance of voting. And it was just a great turnout and very effective. One of the other measures we're looking at doing, in fact, it's scheduled for November 2nd at Shiloh Missionary Baptist Church through our pastor, Andre Parker. But he's leading an effort with all of the other churches, especially Black-led churches, to have souls to the polls. And so it's an opportunity for individuals, again, to gather collectively in groups and then march to the Division of Elections and cast our vote. Even if individuals have already voted, they're still going to participate by attending and showing camaraderie and collectively participating in the Get Out to Vote. So there's other measures that we're doing, but we know that we have got to reach our communities, and these are just some of the ways in order to do that.
Yeah, it sounds like, you know, rather than waiting for people come to you, you have to sort of go to where they're at and, you know, finding those avenues. One of the things I'm really curious about when talking about how to get information to people or get the systems working, the post office is a very big resource in rural communities. Michelle, can you talk a little bit about, like, why it's so important to have a functioning postal service?
You know, I see on Facebook all the time random friends posting the fact that the post office is open. And I have to ask, why does that need to be announced? Because that's something we obviously take for granted in the road system, that you have fully staffed places and you have operational hours. In the villages, you may have a lot of staffing issues. I discovered that the Postal Service only advertises these jobs through Indeed.com, and we are not a community that does our job searches online. And we also have broadband deserts. You know, the infrastructure bill may change that in a few years, but that, you know, takes a lot of time and a change of culture. So the Postal Service also and the Division of Elections do not do recruiting at village levels or even regional levels. They do job fairs like in Anchorage and Juneau. So it has to be a culture shift among the system to accommodate the realities of two-thirds of the state. 131 precincts are recognized as being entirely dependent on the Postal Service. And those are a lot of mixed precincts. They're not just Native. So, you know, there's no equality here when we're talking about a system that depends on the post office, and it doesn't mean we all have the same services that everyone else enjoys.
Yeah, it's funny. I lived in Kotzebue for 2 years, and I know that in a lot of ways, you know, the radio station there got every major announcement in town because that was the way people listened. I used to find like every spattering of whether it was job offers or community outreach or public events at the local AC store, you know, because that's where people went. That's where they were looking for their information. And so it's really interesting that, you know, the systems that are in place don't seem to be actually reaching out to people, or at least the systems aren't being maintained so that everybody sort of gets an equal share at even being able to participate, let alone getting information about it. And, you know, on the topic of information, I'm curious, as you do outreach, Emily, you know, there's a lot of attention on misinformation when it comes to voting, whether it's on certain issues or about the voting system in general. As your volunteers are working to do outreach, how often do they encounter misinformation? And what do you think their role is in combating that, if there is any?
I think the role of our coalition and you know, the 22 organizations and growing that are participants of the Voter Hub is to share accurate information. You know, we were discussing earlier about the general confusion about elections right now, because in 2022 we had an all vote by mail election. We had two special elections. Anchorage conducts our elections entirely by mail. You know, we just had a primary election, and now we have to tell people, no, you have to vote again. There's another election coming up. We were just engaging in the Fairbanks municipal election. There are elections all the time in Alaska, and we use different voting methods. We use different voting types. In the general election, we will be using ranked choice voting for only the second time in the state. So I think just that general voting information, this is how you should vote, not who to vote for or what to vote for, but the mechanics of how to cast a ballot are how we can empower our communities to get out there and vote.
I can just add to that, that's why I really appreciate the Voter Hub. And that's because, you know, if we're having an activity, I can invite Emily and she'll share her knowledge with our communities, because we don't know everything. And what we don't know, Emily brings to the table through the Voter Hub. And what I really love about Michelle and Get Out the Native Vote is the fact that she speaks my language. I mean, we're able to relate on so many issues as it relates to all this systemic issues that are out there as it relates to voting. And I think about the time when there was no drop boxes in Mountain View for people to drop their ballots off. And somebody raised that issue, And we brought it to the attention. I posted something on Facebook, and I remember it was Senator L.B. Gray Jackson who picked up on it and said, we're going to have some drop boxes delivered to Mountain View. But why should we have to raise that as an issue? Why aren't there drop boxes automatically in Mountain View and other areas? Especially, we know that there are predominantly people of color in those areas. So, you know, there's a lot I could say, but I'll stop here.
Yeah, I'm really curious as to why there, you know, as a voter, you know, we were talking earlier about the confusion over voter signatures, you know, like do I need to sign this? Does my wife need to sign this? You know, is someone going to double check my wife's signature to make sure it's valid? I'm curious if you can talk a little bit about why all of our statewide elections just seem to be so disjointed and not uniform. It strikes me that maybe having there be a standard for how every election is handled, whether it's by mail, whether it's in person at the polls, whether it's ranked choice. Do you know why we're so disparate?
Well, if I could get into that. Yeah. I think the pandemic knocked everything off kilter, and the Supreme Court had waived the witness provision requirement in 2020 because of the pandemic. And they didn't want to expose more people just having to go find a signature somewhere outside their bubble. And with 2022, the midterms, it was, you know, a lot of confusion on as to whether or not they needed that. They thought, oh, we don't have to do that anymore. So a number of ballots were thrown out because they did not have a witness signature. So it's, you know, it was that and also post offices hand canceling these ballots after the deadline. And there's just a lot of reasons why you can go to bed at night knowing, hey, I voted, I did my job, I did my part. But there are systemic issues that can affect the count in the end.
And in addition to that, sometimes, depending on where you live, you need a post, you know, you need to put postage on your envelope. And then there's places where you don't need to put postage on it. What is that all about? It's confusing. And sometimes I think there's so much confusion because it deters individuals from voting. It just doesn't make sense why it is not easy to vote.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things that when we had done coverage of the fact that it was like 1 in 8 ballots in rural Alaska were thrown out, you know, there was the concept of ballot curing, which was, you know, letting people know, hey, something was wrong with your ballot. Maybe, you know, you can fix it. We're giving you the opportunity to fix it. You know, and I know Anchorage allows for that ballot curing. It's not allowed or it's not done on the statewide level. Can you talk a little about like ballot curing and how if that's helped, if anyone can weigh in on it?
Absolutely. The Voter Hub has, you know, two branches of our work. There's the voter education and voter outreach side of things, and then there's the policy and advocacy side of things. And on the policy and advocacy side of things, we've developed a shortlist, a white paper of our policy priorities, among them paid postage on all absentee ballots, so that people don't have to pay to vote on an absentee ballot, and ballot curing. It is well understood that if people had the opportunity to remedy a reasonable error, you know, you forgot to get a witness signature, you made a reasonable mistake on your ballot. If you were given the opportunity to remedy that error and cast a ballot, more votes would have been counted in 2022, and people who vote by mail would have valid votes counted at a higher rate. So that, among other things, are the Voter Hub's policy priorities to empower voters and to ensure that all valid votes are counted.
You're listening to Talk of Alaska with Alaska Public Media. We are talking about voter engagement today. You know, and as we're on the topic of, you know, particularly marginalized communities, you know, Celeste, we talked about this earlier. You were featured in our debate for the state last week where you asked about how candidates plan to help and engage with underrepresented groups. As someone who's done a lot of that work in the past, and maybe Michelle, you can weigh in too, like, what do you think candidates miss when it comes to reaching underrepresented people?
I think candidates miss the relationship. I think most or a lot of candidates don't visit our communities until it's election time. I am so tired of candidates showing up on Sunday, you know, at the church when it's, you know, there's opportunities to secure votes. We need to see you outside of elections. I mean, we need you to know about our communities and our businesses. And so it's important to develop those relationships prior to elections. It's more than an election for us.
Yeah. And Michelle, can you talk a little about what, you know, either rural or urban native populations, just what aren't candidates doing or what are they kind of missing?
Right. It is a small population state, but it is a very small legislature. You know, we've got 20 senators, we've got 40 House representatives, and they make decisions that affect all of us in the state. And when you have candidates or incumbents that are just really stuck in their community and they don't like to see the full scope of their decision-making process, that has harmed us in innumerable ways since statehood, since the territorial days. So we always invite urban and suburban lawmakers to come visit and get to know a little bit more about rural Alaska, which feeds Alaska's wealth. And our tribal status also feeds Alaska's state healthy status. We stepped up during COVID as being caregivers and providing coverage for non-native, you know, household members and employees and whatnot. You know, it grew. We took the lead on that kind of, the tribal healthcare system took a lead on that kind of activity. And if we did not have tribal status, which only happened in 1997, we would not have all the federal resources that we do now. So, you know, unlike the inability for the state's departments to file their federal grants in time or the paperwork correctly, the tribes are doing a lot of heavy lifting to cover our own bases. But we do want a responsive government. We want Juneau to be a lot more mindful of the roles we play in the state's health.
And one of the things I'm curious about is the idea that I imagine that you mentioned there are over 100 communities in Alaska that are off the road system, considered sort of rural, and it can be hard to sort of go to every single community. You know, what for people maybe thinking of running for office, you know, what resources are there to better connect with people who maybe logistically it can be difficult to reach?
Go to the tribal healthcare system. Go to ANMC's campus. Go up to TCC's campus up in Fairbanks. There are hub events and hub communities that you can reach a lot of people at once. And it's not that we're asking you to come all the way out to our communities, but even hitting one per culturally distinct region is effective, and it gives you a really big idea of what you're making decisions about.
And, you know, one thing I'm curious about is as you're talking to maybe first-time voters or people who maybe they voted one time 10 years ago and they just haven't really wanted to get to the polls, you know, what are the sorts of things you hear from them as to why they didn't vote? You mentioned that the voter turnout in the Native community was in like the 60%. Like any group of people, that'd be
of
insane.
Of any group in this country, yes, 66% is really high. One village, the Kotzebue area, had almost 80% turnout in 1982. And the YK Delta, Mary Peltola's region, had a 77% turnout. It's extraordinary to look at how we were legendary super voters, and we held on to that trend through the 90s. That was to defend subsistence, 1982's ballot initiative that was to take away rural preference. So the Native community rallied, and we defeated it by over 66%. And to see it drop an average, you know, 50 points since then is really demoralizing, but it also is aspirational because now with, you know, Get Out the Native Vote and civic groups being a year-round effort and not just an election time experience, is that we can dedicate resources and time and attention to history in order to inform us and hold a mirror up to say, look, this is what we used to be as voters. This is what we are now. Let's go back to those earlier numbers.
Yeah, and Celeste, you know, I've seen a lot in the news lately about, mostly on the presidential level, you know, the importance of outreach to the Black community, you know, all of these events that people are doing. And when you encounter people who maybe are entering the vote workforce, so to speak, I'm trying to think of a metaphor for that, you know, what are some of the reasons you hear as to why they weren't voting?
It's very disappointing when I hear individuals share that they're not voting or they haven't voted. And largely, I hear it's because what's in it for me? I mean, you're not, the candidates are they're not doing anything for our community. We've got the highest unemployment rate. And so what difference does it make for me to vote? And I always go back to the history, and I shared that earlier, about the importance of voting because, you know, it was the 14th Amendment that really provided citizenship, but it was the 15th Amendment that allowed us Black people, Black men to vote. And even then, there were all these restrictions, you know, there was the poll tax and, you know, the grandfather rights and just all of these deterrents to make it very difficult for individuals to vote. And now we have the right to vote. And it's just so, you know, it's disheartening when I learn, or when individuals, I mean, how embarrassed, it's embarrassing for me, really it is, to see or hear especially somebody of color, a black person, tell me that they're not voting. So they get the history lesson from me, and then, you know, hopefully it changes their mind, but, you know, there's still a lot of work that we need to do as a community to make sure individuals are registered, make sure that they're informed. You know, it's not enough to cast your vote. You need to be educated on the issues so that you're making the right vote. And then making sure they actually show up when it's time to cast that vote or put their ballot in the box. Whatever method, vote.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, is it on, when it comes to sort of the what's in it for me, do you think that it's on candidates to tell them, like, here's what's in it for you if you vote for me? Or if it's on sort of groups like the Alaska Voter Hub to be like, it's important to vote, you know, it's always important to vote.
Well, for me, I think there's a lack of trust when it comes to candidates. And so I believe it's important upon organizations like ours, individuals that trust us. I mean, we a lot of us look like the individuals we're talking to. And so they can relate. For me, I don't know what the other panelists think, but for me, I think it's important for us to get out to our communities and share this knowledge and information.
Yeah, Michelle, on the topic of what's in it for me.
Yeah, I've been going out to schools to recruit, and you were trying to figure out a word for the workforce. I'm calling it the tribal workforce development issue to make election workers a thing and postal workers a thing, because we need it. And I've been visiting schools, and I went to the Lower Yukon School District in February, and they had a 2.5% increase from their 2023 school board elections to this year's, compared to this year's. So I'm taking that as a positive, you know, affirmative step, that going to the communities and talking to them and have, like Celeste said, having them, me be someone delivering this kind of important message is more relatable and it lands better, and then you get a response from the community.
Yeah, I guess that's sort of the overarching goal of the Voter Hub, is to sort of assemble what would have been sort of disparate groups in the past and sort of funneling it all into one united front.
Yeah, being the coordinating hub for this type of work, kind of doing a landscape assessment and see who is Celeste talking to, who is Michelle talking to, and getting a lay of the land when it comes to, who else needs to be reached. The Voter Hub does some voter outreach, especially in historically underserved communities or in areas where there are high concentrations of voters who don't turn out to the polls. So we do, you know, you might get a knock on your door from someone representing the Voter Hub. You might get a phone call from someone representing the Voter Hub. And that's just to make sure that we are spreading the information out far and wide. And when it comes to the question of, you know, why is an individual vote important? I'm a data nerd, and I always look, you know, what tactics did we use that were effective and turned people out to vote? Kind of honing in on how we do our outreach and how best to reach people. And again, always defer to community groups. They know how to reach their community. They know best what verbiage is going to work. They know best what tactics are going to work. But I always point to, you know, this is a state with really slim vote margins. You know, just last month or earlier this month, rather, in Fairbanks, a candidate won with 150 votes. So a single vote matters a lot. We were doing just like kind of a deep dive recently on close races. And in the last 10 years, there have been a handful of races that have been won by less than 10 votes. So when someone is questioning whether or not their vote is important, it is, and it does matter, and it could make a difference. It does make a difference. So that's the messaging that I tend to defer to in my data brain.
Then again, those are plurality wins, you know, in the traditional voting system, with open primaries and ranked choice voting. Trying to change the culture where we need majority wins has really started to change the way candidates and incumbents look.
Yeah, well, we're going to take a quick break here on Talk of Alaska, but we will return when Talk of Alaska returns. And welcome back to Talk of Alaska. The topic today is engaging voters in underserved communities. I'm host Wesley Early in for Lori Townsend. So, you know, Emily, one of the things I've been really curious about the Voter Hub is there are some organizations that are a part that do have political outreach. You know, certainly the ACLU has filed lawsuits that tend to fall one way politically. Alaskans for Better Elections literally advocate for something that is on the ballot this time around. How do you ensure that voters can trust that you're just trying to get them to vote and maybe not necessarily vote in line with your organization?
Yeah, absolutely. And the simple answer to that question is that all of the work that occurs under the Voter Hub banner is nonpartisan. We don't talk about candidates. We don't talk about parties. All of our outreach is nonpartisan. Many of the organizations we work with do have two branches of engagement. They have their the side of their organization that talks about candidates, and they will advocate for candidates. And then there's a separate and distinct part of their organization that is nonpartisan and is simply civic engagement, and I work with that part of their organization. So our work is nonpartisan. It's simply civic engagement. It's just voter education. And there's no wiggle room there. We don't allow talk about candidates or parties or politics. It's just education.
Is the Alaska Black Caucus kind of
We're right in line with that. We're nonpartisan. As I shared, 501c3, we don't endorse candidates, but we will have community conversations with all candidates. We invite everyone. Now, not everyone shows up, but the invitation is out there. In fact, we just had one recently last Sunday with the U.S. congressional individuals. And, you know, we had two candidates and two that didn't show. So, but our goal is to get the information out. And, you know, once you hear where candidates stand on the issues that we care about, then you make that vote. And, you know, we know that our work is effective because we have a lot of individuals that participate, that attend, and that ask questions. So that's one of the ways that we're engaged.
All right. Well, we're going to take it to the phones real quick. We've got Marge calling from Anchorage. Marge, thanks for joining Talk of Alaska.
Thanks for taking my call. I'm Marge, and I'm with AARP Alaska, and I'm calling in today because 50-plus voters consistently vote at higher rates than any other age group, which means they are the deciders in elections. And so voter and candidate engagement is important to us. So we have a proud, long history of nonpartisan voter engagement again, also, and don't endorse candidates or give money to their campaigns. But we do also educate on where, when, and how to vote and raise visibility with candidates and voters on issues that matter to 50-plus voters. So in 2020, our AARP Alaska voter engagement focus was on educating older voters on how ranked choice voting works. And in post-election polling, we learned that our audience of 50-plus voters responded that nearly 95% of respondents reported receiving instructions on how to complete their ranked choice ballot. And that the percentage of people who reported not receiving instructions was half that of under 50 voters. So anyway, this year we're focused on when, where, and how to vote and not on ranked choice voting, because our folks got the message and continued to be super voters. And we're focused on engaging with candidates on the top issues impacting older Alaskans. And so what those are is the concerns we hear about most often, and also shows up in polling from older Alaskans, mirror those of older Americans across the country, which are concerns about having enough retirement income to live on, family caregivers needing more support, healthcare access concerns, and support for aging independently at home. So 50-plus voters can find our suggestion questions for state and federal candidates in this month's issue of the Senior Voice, in an article titled "A Place Where We Can All Choose How We Live as We Age." And you can find our AARP Alaska Voter Guide at aarp.org/AKVotes. And then lastly, as we do every year, the AARP Bulletin reached out to both Vice President Harris and former President Trump to ask their views on the most important federal issues for Americans over 50, that also include caregiving, Medicare, Social Security, the economy, and prescription drugs. And AARP members should receive their copy in the mail this week. but you could also search it online for AARP Bulletin.
All right.
Thanks for taking my call today and for hosting the show.
Yeah, thanks so much for calling, Marge. And, you know, on the topic of AARP, you know, it brings to mind sort of a lot of the logistical questions about getting out the vote. You know, I think about, you know, when it comes to our senior voters, having resources for them to be mobile, to get to the polls, you know, having resources available, like Marge mentioned, to sort of let them know how it works. I guess maybe Michelle or Celeste, can you talk a little about, you know, that logistical hurdle, you know, like how do you get people who maybe have trouble getting to the polls to the polls?
I know within our church, we're offering rides to the polls as well. But, you know, I want to go back to something that Marge shared and, you know, the importance of putting that packet together with information about the candidates. I know she talked about reaching out to both the candidates and getting the information back. And I think about the congressional report card that the NAACP puts out annually, and it gives a legislative report card to all of the legislators. And I'm just going to say this. I know that there the senators that we have in Alaska, they at least Senator Murkowski continues to receive an F grade on the report card. And it's the grade is based on his votes on issues that we care about in the Black community. And so that's how you make a determination on who you're going to support and who you would vote for. So I just wanted to share that information as well, putting together report cards or connecting with the individuals that are running for office, learning where they stand on the issues, and then compiling a report and allowing our members to take a look at that to make an informed decision when they go to the polls.
Yeah, Michelle, can you talk a little about, you know, the logistics of getting people out to vote and maybe some of what Get Out the Native Vote does to sort of compile that information for specific groups?
Right. Like I said before, that the logistics of even just getting the election equipment to our communities is probably our biggest breath-holding, you know, concern. And it's weather, it's distance, it's cargo, it's, you know, the post office and the Division of Elections coordinating, is the air carriers. So it's vote early. If not a lot of our villages have early voting opportunities, but our hubs do, and the city does. So when you're coming in for medical services and whatnot, make a plan of vote. Vote early, vote absentee. Again, absentee is really depends on whether or not you have a really good postal service. But we're trying to get people to vote early so that you don't have to struggle or scramble to figure out how to vote on election day. We did not find out that Wales and Anaktuvuk Pass and Kaktovik did not open until 7 p.m. on the primary election day. We could not be responsive. We could not help fill the gap with that kind of delayed notification with 1 hour to go. Anaktuvuk Pass, I believe they had a half hour's worth of voting that day. But for the other two, it's a crying shame. And we do have plans in place to have trained, mobilized rural indigenous outreach workers ready to send out to these vulnerable precincts to make sure they do have an election worker on hand so that we don't suffer these kind of mistakes in the future.
Yeah, we're going to go back to the phones. John is calling from Petersville. John, thanks for joining the show today.
Well, thank you for having me.
What would you like to discuss?
I just like to state my opinion. I think we ought to do away with this ranked choice voting. I think it's a bunch of shenanigans. I think if you got a person you want to vote for, you vote for that person. There shouldn't be no second, third. And last year I voted, and I only voted for the one person I wanted to vote for, and I found out that my vote didn't count because I didn't put no second, third choice. I think that's stupid. That's it. And I'm almost not wanting to vote this year because we're doing this ranked choice voting crap. And that's all I got to say. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, John. I appreciate your call. And, you know, this is a nice segue into, you know, with ranked choice voting, how has voter outreach changed? I'm curious, you know, we've heard broadly that some people have described it as confusing. Some people describe it as maybe it sounds like John was describing as maybe less democratic than other systems. What have you run into with voters who have questions about ranked choice voting or maybe sort of opinions one way or the other on the topic? We'll start with Emily.
Sure. You know, I think there was this concern that ranked choice voting would be confusing for folks. But after the election in 2022, we found that people effectively cast their ballot, and it wasn't a barrier to voting. Ranked choice voting did not keep people from casting a ballot. And in fact, ranking your ballot can, like John said, if he had ranked his ballot, he would have had the opportunity to weigh in on what candidate he would prefer if his first choice candidate didn't get that 50% threshold. So ranking your ballot will empower you, and it will make your vote go further. It's still one person, one vote. That has not changed. But there is a need for additional education when we tell people that you should rank your ballot. You should make sure that you make your voice heard. You have your first choice candidate. And if you choose to rank, your ballot will work harder for you in the end.
Yeah, go ahead first.
I think it, I agree, but I do believe that for some it is confusing. I mean, just to bring in a whole another piece to the voting, people are they're used to voting, and that's it. This is something new. And so anytime you bring in something new, there's sometimes some confusion, and there's still some confusion surrounding this in the communities that I work with, especially for our seniors and those new voters. So I just wanted to add that.
Yeah. You know, one of the things I'm curious about is, you know, the deadline to register to vote has recently passed. So what's your focus now? You know, now that everybody who can get registered has been, or at least the time has passed, no one else can get registered.
Well, that's for statewide races.
Right, for statewide.
But if anyone wants to vote in the presidential election and they're at least 18 by November 5th, you can register at the polls and vote for the presidential race.
Oh, so I guess is the focus now more on presidential, or are there sort of other logistical sides, Emily?
In addition to what Michelle mentioned, I am encouraging folks to request a vote by mail ballot. That deadline is coming up on the 26th. And like Michelle mentioned, we should encourage our communities to vote early. You never know what's going to happen on election day. Your kid might be sick. There might be a big snowstorm. Will the roads be plowed? The questions remain. So voting early is a great way to make sure that your vote is cast, regardless of what happens on election day.
And before we take another break, I'm really curious about, you know, the first time voters. You know, I certainly remember the first time I voted. It was at a church in my local community. Do you find that you have to tailor your message a little differently when you're talking to younger people? Or is there kind of a nice broad a broad umbrella? Maybe, Michelle, we can start with you.
Younger, middle-aged, or older, it's been fascinating when we table to hear a person's experience or approach to voting. I've had a number of adults come and finally admit, I don't know how to do it. And that's a fair thing to point out, because us as voter educators, yes, let's go back to zero. Let us show exactly what voting involves. And we've taped a poll, a mock polling station. We've showed people how to vote at the polling place on election day, how to vote by absentee and fill out the paperwork for that, and how to vote by special needs, which is kind of a misnomer because, you know, if you don't have the same representative collecting your ballot for you and delivering it back with the same signature, it's going to get knocked out. So there's not a lot of convenience to the special needs process, but we hope to improve those in the future with improved voting laws.
Yeah, and Celeste, I'm curious, you know, how do you find that it's different with younger voters who are maybe just about to start voting, or is it pretty similar among all groups of non-voters?
I think for me, the younger voters are hyped. They're really excited about this opportunity to vote, especially, you know, they share, you know, there's a chance that we can get somebody that looks like me or a female, a woman, elected to the highest office in the land. And so a lot of folks are really excited, especially our younger individuals, yeah, communities.
I looked at the 2022 numbers, and the 18-year-olds were in the honeymoon phase. This is their first time they get to vote, and they do. They voted up at about a rate of 28%. But 19 through 24, they dropped an average 10 points in activity. So we need to sustain that and keep the youth enthusiasm through their young adulthood lives.
All right, well, we're going to take another break real quick, but we will return when Talk of Alaska continues on your radio. All right, welcome back to Talk of Alaska. Our topic today is voter engagement, particularly in underserved communities. So as we are aim to close out the hour. You mentioned earlier the early voting deadline. Are there any other deadlines people should be looking out for?
You can request a vote-by-mail ballot until October 26th online, or you can mail in a paper ballot, or excuse me, a paper application, rather. And early voting starts next week on the 21st. Those are our two big deadlines before November 5th, which is Election Day.
3 weeks from today.
3 weeks from today.
You know, we were talking about people who don't vote, and I'm curious, we talked a little bit about the what's in it for me side of it, but are there other things that we hear from non-voters or people who are aware that there's election going on and they just are actively choosing not to vote? Maybe Michelle, if you could start.
Yeah, we just did a podcast with Native Movement last month, and one of the younger hosts was saying she did not want to participate in a colonized system, and we can appreciate that. I mean, there's a lot of trauma within Celeste and our communities. We did not even get the right to vote until 9 years before I was born here in Alaska. My mother was already a full-fledged adult by the time she got the right to vote in the eyes of Alaska. So we have a lot of historical trauma that can make us suspicious and resentful of the systems we have to work with. But the point of being citizens, whether or not it was our decision, is that we have to utilize the system to get the best out of it. And we're going to get a government whether or not we participate. And we're asking our community, you have to have a say in it, and let's have a say in it and get that representative government so it is more responsive, we get better policies, and we get better funding.
Yeah, and I guess before we move on, to sort of address the caller we had earlier who had said that if you only vote for one candidate, your ballot will not be counted. That is not true. It's just that your ballot, your second, third, fourth choices won't be counted if you only rank one person, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really glad we're revisiting that. And to John, the previous caller, his vote absolutely did count. If the candidate that he picked at his number one choice, the sole candidate that he voted for, did not reach that 50% threshold, his vote is called, his ballot is called spoiled. So he just voted for a candidate.
Or exhausted.
If he didn't rank, he didn't elect or choose the opportunity to pick a second choice candidate. But his vote absolutely did count.
Yeah.
There is power in ranking. And again, if your preferred candidate was the least vote getter and they get knocked out because nobody got 51%, you have an ability to vote in this instant runoff process with the remaining candidates. So there's the power in ranking.
And, you know, we got another call about a deterrent to voting that I didn't even think about, but, you know, long lines at polling offices. It's certainly a problem in Anchorage, Fairbanks. The person noted that since it's a lower income area and public funds distribution problem, the mainstream media avoids discussing it. And it's sort of making a larger deal about showing an ID rather than addressing long lines. How can long lines be addressed?
Is that vote just early. Vote early. Starting Monday, October 21st, early voting is available in Anchorage, at least, City Hall, and the 2525 Gamble Street Division of Elections Office. Cook Inlet Tribal Council is hosting an absentee polling station from 10 to 4 on October 28th and November 1 through 4.
And John, I just want to go back to Wesley, the question you asked about why individuals aren't voting. Michelle shared a historical perspective, and I want to bring it up to the current day. I mentioned about Senator Sullivan, Murkowski, but there's also Senator Sullivan. When I talked about the NAACP report card on issues and concerns within the Black community, where candidates are getting the F grade, so people don't see their issues being resolved, or even they don't see anything happening with them. And so they're like, well, we put these people in office, but they're not doing anything for our communities. So that's another deterrent. I believe that people aren't voting. They don't see anything good coming to their communities.
Yeah, and actually, I would like to segue, because I'd like to talk about, you know, what are bringing people to the polls? You know, as you're seeing people who are excited to vote, who are engaging this, like, what is bringing, you know, I'm curious, Michelle, have you heard of any, are there like overarching themes that you're hearing from your outreach that are really motivating people to vote this time around?
Well, downstates, you know, they're all talking about the economy. And that's always important. But for Alaska, where we have very little of that in Western Alaska, you know, I think the Bush Caucus, when we were legendary voters, was a very powerful group. And they designed something like the Power Cost Equalization Program, where rural areas got to pay the same rate as road system areas. And that has always been a sacrosanct program. The legislature wouldn't touch it. But like I said earlier, a lot of these lawmakers don't make considerations for life in rural Alaska, or they say things like, well, if you don't like it, you should move. And then we get here and they say, go back to where you came from. So there's just no winning. We want to live where we live, where we've lived for centuries, but we want the same comforts that everybody else is afforded, and we want affordable energy rates. We've had lawmakers try to cut our power cost equalization funding, and that's terrifying, because what good is a PFD, a fully funded PFD, if all it's going toward is an energy bill instead of mad money going to Hawaii or getting a flat screen TV?
Yeah. And Celeste, I'm curious, you know, when you're hearing from people who've decided this is going to be the time to vote, you know, your organization through the gospel celebration, and someone said, you know what, I've decided I'm voting. What are some of the reasons people are giving you?
I think some of the reasons is the fact that they're informed, that they're learning more about their choices. They're learning more about the ballot. We're bringing forth information that they might not have received before. And so it's an opportunity for us to engage and them to actually respond. And we're really excited about that. I think, too, that it's really important that individuals that are interested in running for office step up to the plate once they learn some of the issues and how they can benefit our community by running for office themselves. And so I feel like, again, I go back to the relationships. I think a lot of times people care about who they care about. And because they're not exposed to other communities, they lack that awareness. And so I welcome candidates to come and visit our communities to learn more about us as a people and to learn about our issues and our concerns. So people are excited. They really are.
And Emily, before we leave, you know, we had Get Out the Native Vote and the Alaska Black Caucus here today, but there are a whole host of organizations in the Voter Hub. I'm curious if you could talk about some of the creative approaches other community members, other organizations have done to do this sort of outreach.
Oh, yeah. I mentioned the Pacific Community of Alaska recently. They had a health fair. That's an issue that's really important to their community, and they were talking about Get Out the Vote at that event. I'm working with Sol de Medianoche, which is the Spanish language newspaper, to make sure we have pamphlets about voting at the Día de los Muertos festival coming up in Spinard. And, you know, as I mentioned, these communities have unique audiences, and they know best how to reach their community. And I'm eager to work with and support all of these organizations, 20 true organizations statewide and growing, to figure out how best to reach their community. So I'm here to support and coordinate this outreach and in these final weeks, get folks out to vote.
And one of the things I really love, too, about the Hub is they listen to our issues and concerns, and they try to adopt whatever those issues are so that they're no longer an issue. So I just wanted to share that. I appreciate the partnership.
All right. Well, that was our show today on engaging voters in underserved communities. We were joined by Emily Leek Mitchie with the Alaska Voter Hub. She's the director over there. Michelle Spark is the director of strategic initiatives with Get Out the Native Vote. And Celeste Hodge-Groudon is the president and CEO of the Alaska Black Caucus. I'm Wesley Early. Thank you so much for joining us on Talk of Alaska this morning. Oh, and our engineer was Chris Hyde. Our producer was Madeline Rose, and we had Ava White on the phones. Thank you so much for joining us.
Talk of Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.